on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial President, Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is Thursday, April 30th, last day of the month for InvestTalk. You're listening to InvestTalk, and today I have with me Justin Klein.
As usual.
One of our registered investment advisors, one of just a very few. And he's with me, and hopefully we'll have a good show because of him. It makes it more interesting.
All because of me, huh?
Yeah, well, it makes it more interesting when we disagree, I hear.
I get that a lot. Well, people say, I like it when you both are on the air.
Yeah, I do too. And where we may not, I mean, in other words, we don't necessarily bicker, but we don't see the same thing the same way. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, you have a healthy discussion.
That's right. Our aim is always to provide you some information. Good, solid information. It's a place to maybe make help you become a better than average investor. And so I want to hear about your portfolio today. What's the mix in it? The mix is very, very important, not just the individual stocks. We get a lot of calls on individual stocks, but it's what is the overall balance of the portfolio? So I'd like to hear that. If you have questions on that, please make sure you give us a call. Yesterday I was talking with a caller about tech stocks. And do you remember what I said? When there's a market drop, techs are going to lead the way. Well, did you see what happened to techs today?
Especially the social media space.
Oh, they got smushed.
Oh, yeah. You had Yelp had really bad earnings, and it went down 17% or so today. And after hours, you had LinkedIn.
They were down 25% after hours, if I remember right.
Yeah, it's a big move. So starting the frothiness in that space is starting to dissipate.
You know, we've talked about on, and ad nauseum, probably boring you to death, that this stock or that stock is overvalued. This sector is way overvalued. This is what happens when you get some little bit of bad news. They get crushed. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know when that's going to happen. No, Justin doesn't either. Nobody knows. But we know from our experience that there is going to be a reversion to the mean. Mm-hmm. That's all.
And that's why, you know, we talked about last weekend at our wealth conference about foreign investing, about that's the place for opportunity, and here in America, not so much.
Yeah, it's a little pricey compared to them. It's very pricey compared to certain other areas of the world. Mm-hmm. So, want to hear what your investing experience has been like. One of the toughest lessons is keeping your emotions out of it. And today was a good example of trying to keep your emotions out. I see a market move big, and did you keep your emotions out of it? So that's going to be our topic on InvestTalk 101. Okay, and this feature in the second half of the show. We'll talk about that a little bit. So also, we have a little surprise for you today. Today we have a guest coming on. His name is Scott Cooley, a Director of Policy Research at Morningstar. So we're going to have a few questions for him. I think he'll be very interesting. Okay, so let's turn to the questions you want answered. You can call us on our 24-hour listen line, or you can talk to us live Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 Pacific time. And, of course, that's where we are now. We're live. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us. And here's a question.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to get your advice on how to distribute my 401k. I've been putting in a maximum on my 401k for the past 16 years, and I'm planning I want to retire maybe 3-4 years sooner if I could afford it. What do you think? How would I distribute it? I'm 58.
She's 58, is that what she said?
58. I'm not sure if she mean by distribute it, mean taking money out of the 401k or the distribution of the assets and investments inside of it.
I think she was talking about distribution because she mentioned retirement. She wants to take money out.
Yeah.
Well, remember, if you take it out early, you're going to be penalized, 10% penalty.
But she's in a 401k, so she's 58. She's actually past that penalty phase. It's 55 in a 401k.
Oh, is it 55 in a 401k?
That's the only that's that weird one gap between 55 and 59. In an IRA, you can take money out penalty free at 59 and a half. On a 401k, it's 55. So she can start taking money out penalty free, but she will be taxed on whatever money she does take out.
It's going to go to your adjusted gross income. And your tax for the end of the year, and you'll be taxed at whatever tax rate you are.
Yeah, so I would talk to your accountant and figure out, okay, how much can I take out each year and not push myself into the next tax bracket, right? Because each year is going to be probably a little bit different.
Yeah, and if you are did she mention she was going to retire? Are you really going to retire?
It sounds like she wants to retire soon.
Okay, so then you got to figure out, well, how much money are you going to have incoming and how much are you going to have outgoing every month?
Yep.
And then how much money you need in your 401k, considering taxes. And try to remember, you need this to last for 30, 40 years.
And then what I would do is I would go to our website, go to contact Steve or contact Justin Button. Send us your information. Let us know how much money you have and how old you are, when you're planning to retire, how much, you know, maybe you're going to spend in retirement or need in retirement on a regular basis. And we can run a retirement map for you and say, okay, you're in good shape or you're in bad shape. And if you're, you know, in bad shape, maybe these are the changes you can make. And that goes for anybody out there, not just her.
And congratulations on maxing out the 401k for what? I think she said 16 years?
Yep.
That's good. That's very good. So congratulations on that. Okay, the market, what are we going to talk about today? If you're, you know, we're going to continue talking about 401k plans, and should you buy bonds, mutual funds, stocks? What should you buy?
Yeah, what's the best,
better?
What's the best asset class for your
mutual 401k? Funds versus stocks? Which is better for your 401k? That's going to be one of our main talking points today. And of course, we have Scott Cooley. He'll take up some of our talking point for today. I also wanted to mention or talk about, if we get a chance, the first quarter employment cost index report that came out. That was out this morning. And big blunders millennials, Justin, are making concerning their 401k.
Big blunders,
big
huh?
blunder. A huh. big blunder.
Not a shock.
There was a recent study done, and boy, that I'm surprised. But we'll get to that, I hope.
Yeah, I want to talk about GDP number. GDP number from yesterday, came out yesterday, right?
Yeah.
And it was 0.2%. Everyone's saying, oh, it's not a big deal. It's just like last year when last year's first quarter was negative. And we recovered, you know, in the second, third, and fourth quarter, had pretty good growth. And overall for the year was, what, 2.2%, I think, at the end of the year. So everyone's saying, well, we're going to have a similar type of trajectory. And I'm going to say, we might. You might have a bounce in second, third, and fourth quarter, but it's not going to be nearly as strong as we had last year. So I want to talk a little about that as well.
I don't know if I agree with you on that.
Well, I'll give you some.
Of course, I talked about GDP numbers when it came out, so but that's okay. We'll discuss it again.
But I mean, I think that's important because if we have 0.2% every quarter, you know, that's GDP growth for this year.
Yeah.
That's terrible. And even Bill Gross made a good point that final sales, if you don't include inventories, just final sales, meaning actual economic activity that took place, it was actually negative 0.5%. So,
yeah, but there was three main reasons why that was. I mean, what the cause for that for the first quarter, and I talked about those yesterday. You know, weather being one.
Yeah.
You know, there were.
But I want to talk about what to expect for the next three quarters and whether the rebound is going to be sharp enough to get us over that, you know, 2% GDP growth.
Yeah, well, certainly not going to be 3, which was what all the experts were predicting. Most of them were predicting at the beginning of the year.
3% growth this year. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't see that. And, you know, in our annual letter, we did not say 3. Maybe 2.5, somewhere around that range. Investing in oil service companies can be one of the best ways to invest in oil and gas space without as much exposure to the risk. But how do you find the right ones? What is your question on this Thursday? I'll try to answer it. 888-99-CHARGE, how to connect. You can do it right now here on InvestTalk. 888-99-CHARGE, 888-992-4278. So let's talk about, let's go ahead and move into one of our talking points, Justin.
What, mutual funds versus stocks? Which is better for your 401k?
That's a very interesting question. Most people can't even buy stocks in their 401k. I would say the majority of them can't. But there are accounts, 401ks, that allow you now to opt out of the mutual fund selection and go to a brokerage direct.
Mm-hmm.
So what would be best? And I have my opinion, but probably not the same reasons as you. So why don't you go ahead?
Well, it depends to me on your level of expertise.
That's what I was going to say.
You know, if you are very well educated in the financial world and the investment, the markets, and you keep attuned to them on a regular basis, which is probably about 0.5% of the population that has a 401k, then sure, you can go and do your own stocks. But mutual funds, to me, are better because most people don't understand those dynamics, and are professionals, it's better to left to a professional.
Yeah, it's just that you won't know anything. Most people don't know how to diversify. And remember, you're continually adding money to your 401k, so now you have to continue to be buying stocks. Are you going to buy? Some people load up on certain sectors and industries, and they don't understand about balancing it, mm-hmm. whereas mutual funds do. Mm-hmm. You know, the professional managers do. Mm-hmm. Can you get better performance? Of course, if you're in the right sector, right time, right stocks, but you can also get a lot worse, too. So it's probably best for the majority of people to just buy a good group of mutual funds and, you know, index funds and whatever funds they have there available for you.
Yeah, and one of the key benefits of a mutual fund is their diversification.
Yeah.
You're automatically diversified. Most people don't know, like you said, how to create the diversification and how many stocks you need. You know, we see it all the time.
Yeah.
Clients come in, new account, they transfer over their assets, and we are looking at their portfolio, and they have 1% of their assets in this stock, but they have 18% of their assets in this stock, and comprised of all their assets, it's 38% in one sector, and it's just way out of balance. So
you got to be real careful.
Yeah.
Let's go to Arias in Southern California. He wants to talk about foreign investments. Go ahead, Arias.
How are you guys doing on a Friday?
Good. Thanks for the – it's Thursday, but that's okay.
Oh, that's right. Thursday. I'm a day ahead.
It's okay.
You're working already tomorrow.
He's looking forward to the weekend.
You know, my question is about foreign investments. I'm with the Vanguard Group right now,
mm-hmm.
and I've got a mixture of mutual funds and ETFs.
Okay.
So I don't have any exposure to any emerging markets. I've heard Jack Bogle's explanation about foreign stocks. He seemed to think that, you know, you could stay right here in America and still get exposed to that market.
Yeah.
What is your thoughts on that, Steve?
And that is true. The S&P 500, I think I read the other day, 30% of the earnings come from outside the United States, so of the S&P 500. So that tells you that there's exposure out there. Those big companies have operations worldwide. Now, you can't. I'm going to kind of slightly disagree with them, though. I think you should have a little percentage in emerging markets, especially now.
Yep.
Because emerging markets and emerged markets foreign look more attractive on a valuation basis.
Yeah, and that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about exposure from a revenue standpoint or earnings standpoint. We're talking about exposure from a value standpoint. And at certain times in history, foreign stocks get undervalued and foreign stocks get overvalued. In the mid-2000s, foreign stocks were very expensive compared to domestic stocks. And domestic stocks are really where you should have been based on value that you're getting. Remember, price is what you pay, but value is what you get. And that's what you're looking for as an investor. You're looking for the best value for the price that you're paying. And right now, here in America, that's not where it is. Overseas is really where you get the best value for your dollar.
And Arias, just don't take that as meaning go invest all your money for it. No, just some exposure.
Yeah, increase your exposure.
Yeah.
Well, I think Justin just said something I didn't think about, the value versus the value here.
Yep.
That makes a lot of sense. Because I was getting ready to say, well, if I do go to foreign emerging markets or something, wouldn't I overlap with some of the stocks that I have America? But
you probably would. Yeah, probably. I'm sorry, we got to go. We got a hard break. You're listening to Invest Talk.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Coming up on the next Invest Talk, investors who are millionaires in the making are different from people who are already millionaires. But what about you? Emerging millionaires, are you one? That's our talking point for Thursday. Make that Friday, May 1st. We hope you'll listen to that podcast.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to Bill in Hayward. How you doing, Bill?
Doing well, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
The reason I'm calling along the lines with your last caller, I have a balanced portfolio. Half of my invested funds are in a taxable account, about 30% in a IRA and 20% in a Roth. Okay. And I'm really underweight overseas, and I wanted to get your take and to see if you give me a couple of ideas. I'm looking right now at Vanguard's ETF, the VKG, the European ETF. I just want to see what you think about that.
Okay, this is Vanguard exchange-traded fund seeking the performance corresponding to the Developed Europe Index. Now, do you know what it means by Developed Europe Index?
The more forefront countries like probably France and Germany
and England,
Italy.
It's the bigger countries. The ones are not emerging, not frontier, but already established first world countries.
Yeah, big GDP numbers and things like that.
So what you so you would be weighted to the big companies and the big and the safer countries here. That's how I would see that.
Yeah, you're getting a lot of exposure to France, Germany, Switzerland. Those are really the – and the UK, those are the big weightings here in this particular ETF.
Yeah, Germany's 13%. France is 14%. Yeah, so kind of give you an idea. Yeah, United Kingdom is really –
31%.
Really high.
Yes. So if you actually attended our conference last weekend, which I don't think you did, but we will have one coming up in webinar form pretty soon. You'll see that Europe actually, while it's maybe a little bit better from a valuation standpoint compared to America, it's not really the foreign market that you really want to be leaning towards. Now, not to say it's bad to move some money over there, but it's not as attractive as kind of the Asian markets. Yeah. So
there's more value in the Asian markets right now.
Mm-hmm.
So even though I do think you need to have some exposure to Europe, but you also need to have some exposure to Asia.
Yeah. So having a little bit of this is fine, and moving some money into this ETF is okay. But to me, it's not. It wouldn't be the majority weighting of my foreign ownership.
Now, of course, Asia could be more volatile too.
Yeah.
Don't think we're not talking about volatility. We're talking about a value base.
Exactly.
The valuations seem to be cheaper. Bill, appreciate the call. Thank you. That was VGN is what you're talking
VGK.
About. I'm sorry, VGK, Vanguard Europe ETF. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. First quarter employment cost index came in. And by the way, did you see the jobless claims?
Yeah, they were very good.
Yeah.
Much better than expected.
Yeah, 262,000. It's been running around 300.
Yeah.
So I'm
what?
Not sure if that's a one-week thing.
Now, tomorrow is technically the first Friday of the month.
Correct.
But we don't have a jobs number. Is there – I'm trying to remember why. Usually it's the first Friday of every month. Is there like a cutoff?
Well, probably because there's not enough days from the end of the month to the first Friday. Just one day.
Yeah, so next Friday with actual jobs number.
Probably.
And the ADP report will be Wednesday.
Probably, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the employment cost index comes out every quarter. So it's kind of looking back. I mean, it's looking back for 3 months, January, February, March, and here we are at the end of April. So it's old information, but it is good information. And there was an expectations for it to be up 0.6%. It was actually up 0.7%. And the last quarter of last year was up 0.5%. And then you compare that with March's personal income that came out today. That was flat. No increase at all. And March's consumer spending was up 0.4%, and it was 0.2% in February.
Well, if income's not going up, but cost of employment is going up, then what is accounting for?
What is interesting
healthcare?
Is income actually is going up, but not for March. It was January and February.
Oh, gotcha.
See, so it's a whole quarter that this report of the employment cost index got. And they were talking about what sectors were increasing the highest, with sciences and different services sector. But it was it is kind of interesting. And it goes to, now we know the GDP number was really bad for the first quarter, up 0.2%. So what is it? Is it bad or is it good?
Well, let's talk a little bit quickly about the GDP number. Now, last year, the first quarter GDP was originally reported of 0.1% growth. And it was downgraded after all the revisions. Remember, this is going to be revised a couple times.
Oh, yes.
After the revisions, it was down to negative 2.1%. Now, a lot of people are saying, who knows what it's going to be revised to, but, we're going to have a rebound. Well, if you look at the dynamics of what caused the rebound in the middle part of last year, because the fourth quarter wasn't that strong, it was really the second and third quarter,
right.
You don't have those same dynamics this year. And especially because you look at, like I said before, inventories rose $110 billion compared to $80 billion in the fourth quarter.
Let me real quick. The reason why inventories rose because we had a strike or a slowdown from the
Yes.
So that, all that shipping finally came aboard. So that you had hardly any inventory build up. Yes. So maybe this is a return to natural inventory.
But if inventories are building, that bodes poorly for going forward because now they need to work through all this inventory before they start producing again.
But you had a retardation of consumer spending because of weather, and you have an increase of money in the consumer's
pocket. That is the hope.
Of lower oil prices.
That is the hope.
So there's always offsetting.
That is the hope.
So we'll see. Coming up, a view of the market with Scott Cooley from Morningstar, Director of Policy Research. He'll be very interesting. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Pisa with Justin Klein, and welcome to Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART. Charters our numbers, or give us a call if you want to talk about anything financial. Right now, we have with us Scott Cooley. He is Morningstar's Director of Policy Research and formerly served as in a variety of analysts and management roles at the firm. And, of course, if you haven't heard of Morningstar, you're probably living in a rock somewhere, under a rock or in a cape. He's also a graduate student at the University of Chicago focusing on political science. Scott, appreciate you being with us here on Invest Talk.
Thank you. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, we do appreciate it. I love talking to the smart people out there.
You have to settle for me today.
You reported back in March in Morningstar that America has a $4 trillion retirement savings gap. Now, that's a pretty big number. What does that really mean? Does that mean that we don't have enough money saved in 401ks, IRAs? What does that mean?
Yeah, that's exactly what it means. The number is really based on some research provided by a group called the Employee Benefit Research Institute, which has built this massive retirement database with IRA accounts for about 20 million people and 401k accounts for about 25 million people. Mm-hmm. And basically what they do is taking into account other assets a person may have and Social Security, things like that, project how much people will need to have a reasonable retirement lifestyle, and they find that almost half of people have not saved enough money.
And do you think that's mainly because people just don't save enough, or because they don't really understand how much they need to save in order to have a successful retirement?
I think a variety of factors are at play, but certainly not saving enough is part of it. Part of it is just not having access to workplace retirement savings plans. About half of people in the private sector do not have access to a 401k at work. And the research shows that when people don't have that workplace retirement plan, even though they could invest in an IRA, they tend not to do it.
Yeah, and the limits are a lot lower on an IRA than a 401k. I mean, if you can max out your 401k every year, you're probably in pretty good shape. But even I think if you max out an IRA every year, you can still fall short.
That's exactly right. So if you look at a 401k, maximum combined employer and employee contribution can be in excess of $50,000 under the law if your employer is very generous. And if you look at an IRA contribution limit, if you're under the age of 50, it's only $5,500. So that's a pretty vast disparity.
Yeah. And that's what we see. We see most, when I talk to people, they're just not saving enough. Or they're just starting very late in their working life and can't catch up. That's what I see when I actually talk to people.
Yeah. Now, your latest article on Morningstar.com talks about it's the title is Memo to Industry, Get Behind the Fiduciary Rule. Now, a lot of people out there probably don't know what that is or what that means. Can you explain to everybody how that's going to affect every individual, whether they have a 401k, whether it's an IRA, whether they use a registered investment advisor like us, or maybe a broker at one of the big shops?
Sure. So what's really at issue here is a Department of Labor proposal to require people who give advice on retirement assets to act as fiduciaries, and that simply means putting the interests of the investor first. And there's a difference in regulation right now where an RIA such as yourself has to abide by that standard.
Right.
And there are people who are really held to what's called a suitability standard, and they do not have to put the interests of the investor first. So, for example, someone under that regime could advise a client to move from a very low-cost target date fund in a 401k plan to a target date fund in an IRA that has very high fees and a load, and that's probably okay under the current regulatory regime, and that would not be okay if the Department of Labor proposal goes forward.
Now, would you say most people who have an advisor that isn't a registered investment advisor, would you say that they are operating under that fiduciary standard? And if they're not, say they're a broker, which most of the advisors at the big shops are brokers, I would imagine, are they going to be having to do business differently? Should they move their account? I mean, how should they think about that?
Yeah, so I think there's a wide range of behavior in the broker community, and I think there are a lot of brokers out there that really are trying to operate in a pretty ethical way, putting the investor interests first, and I think there are a lot who aren't. And basically, I think the brokers who really are already operating under that standard should welcome this regulation.
Oh, we do. We love it.
Yeah. Well, because we already do. We're already fiduciaries, so it lines up perfectly for us.
And I think even those who technically aren't fiduciaries, who are trying to still behave like one, even though they're not regulated like one, should also embrace it. Yeah. I think it's really just the people who probably aren't doing a good job for their investors who should be a little more concerned.
Yeah.
Okay, let's change topic a little bit. Let's talk about exchange-traded managed funds, ETF managed funds versus mutual funds are managed. What is the differences? Why would we move from a managed mutual fund to a managed ETF fund? And are they becoming more popular?
Well, there's an initiative to launch what are called exchange-traded mutual funds, and Eaton Vance is one of the leaders in this area. And basically what that would allow you to do is invest in mutual fund-like products that get some of the benefits that exchange-traded funds have, and that could be in part lower fees, and there are certain strategies that ETFs can use to minimize their tax burden that these exchange-traded managed mutual funds would also be able to use. So from an investor perspective, they might be a little more complicated, harder to understand, but there could be some big benefits, and a number of shops, including Eaton Vance and Gabelli, are going to be rolling them out probably later this year or early next year.
Now, are you a bigger fan of ETFs or mutual funds? Because I know a lot of listeners out there, they probably invest in one or the other or both, and I think it's still unclear to a lot of people which is the best for each individual.
Yeah, I think it really depends on your individual circumstances, and I'll say that I buy both. So in my taxable accounts, I tend to buy more ETFs because they do have greater tax efficiency, and where I'm making those regular investments in my 401k, I tend to buy mutual funds because there are some characteristics that they have that are better for people who are making those regular investments, at least with the 401k plan that we have right now.
So, so do you think the whole industry is moving? It seems like to me ETFs are becoming so popular. Do you think they're moving away from mutual funds to ETFs, or are they both going to be around for the next generation?
Yeah, I think they'll both be around, but I think mutual funds are going to have to find ways to deliver some of the value that ETFs have offered to continue to attract share. I mean, our analysts just put out a report recently that showed, you know, there has been this move toward index-based funds over the last decade, but even in terms of the flows going to funds that are not index-based, the active funds, almost all of the assets have been flowing into very low-cost funds offered by Vanguard and T. Rowe Price and Fidelity.
But isn't that kind of true in any bull market? We've been in a bull market since 2008 to 2009. And when that bull market comes, it seems like to me index funds get more and more and more popular.
Yeah, that's what I see. I see everyone wants to index when things are going great, but then when volatility hits, you know, indexes get hit pretty hard, and they're no longer quite as attractive. And, you know, over a long-term perspective, they can be good. But I see this as a trend that, you know, in bull markets, indexing great, and bear markets, people tend to forget about indexing.
Yeah, they don't look long-term.
Yeah, do you see that?
You know, I think there are always cyclical elements to mm-hmm. investment trends, and I do think, you know, the cyclical factors have also favored the index funds. But in the long term, I do think that lower cost offerings, whether they're index funds or they're actively managed funds that have figured out ways to minimize costs and yeah. tax inefficiencies, will probably do well. I do think that people, I think a lot of individuals have noticed this, and I think a lot of RIAs as well have kind of been pushing people toward lower cost products.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you wrote an article about the Supreme Court and the Affordable Care Act and how it may provide an opportunity for you. And you said that the investors shouldn't worry about the court's impending decision. Don't you think that if they strike down the rule that you know, there'll be a big headache for the healthcare providers that have done very well because of the Affordable Care Act?
Sure. You know, I'll be honest. That's the article that I thought I was writing when I started doing the research. But mm-hmm. I talked to our analysts who cover the drug companies, the publicly traded hospital companies, and the insurance companies that mm-hmm. are publicly traded. And universally, they told me that people overestimate the amount of profitability that these businesses are deriving from the Affordable Care Act. And there are a variety of reasons for that. But one, just to take one in the hospital space, one of the big issues for hospitals is uncompensated care. So
right.
if someone comes to the emergency room without health insurance, the hospital still needs to treat that person.
Right.
Most of those people are eligible for Medicaid now in the states that have expanded Medicaid. You know, states don't have to do that. They're not people who are buying policies through the exchange. You tend to have somewhat higher incomes. So,
right.
you know, the argument there is that the far more consequential decision is whether the state decides to expand its Medicaid program or not, and that's really going to be unaffected by this.
So you're saying there's a backup for those that maybe now being covered under the Affordable Care Act. If it does get shot down, they still will be covered because Medicaid will probably cover them anyway.
Now, so, you know, I didn't really think about that. That makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah. For a lot of those folks, that's true. And, you know, some of our analysts have said, too, that companies have hinted that they've been talking with the states about ways to respond to, the companies have been, about ways to respond to a potential adverse decision. And is there some way to use the infrastructure, the federal exchange, but meet the technical requirement of a Supreme Court ruling if it does go against the Affordable Care Act? So, you know, we'll have to see the ruling to know that. And then just one other thing I would say is that our healthcare or our drug company analysts said that for Pfizer example, they've disclosed that less than 1% of their revenue is coming from Affordable Care Act enabled, you know, health expenditures, so that would be affected by this decision.
Yeah. So that's nothing.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Scott. We appreciate you spending some time with us. We've been talking to Scott Cooley, who is Morningstar's Director of Policy Research, and we appreciate his perspective. You can read his columns regularly in Morningstar. Certainly worth your time as we wrap up the Financial Literacy Month. This is InvestTalk, and you can reach us now at 888-99-CHART.
A quick reminder, if there's a term that you hear mentioned on the program but you're unclear about what it means or you have a question about it, we want you to ask.
I was trying to end it too, but
it's very likely that you're not the only one with that same question. 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. And I know I'll repeat that ad nauseum here on the radio station, but they tell me you have to do that, so that you guys can put it in your mind, and then when you want to call it, you already remember it. So let's talk to Frank in Redwood City.
Yeah, hi, guys. Mine's kind of short and sweet. I just want to hear your opinions. I have a pretty good-sized position with J&J, Johnson & Johnson, and I haven't done much of anything. I was wondering if I should sit tight and see something comes out of it.
Okay. Johnson & Johnson, the symbol is J&J. We actually own this in some of our managed accounts. It is one of those companies that is really big, blue chip, kind of anti-cyclical, or at least not cyclical. And you really don't buy it for its growth or its dynamic movement up and down. You buy it for that dividend, 3%. And you hope to buy it at a low price.
Yeah, and right now, you know, we own it for our clients, so we think it is, you know, modestly undervalued. It's not dramatically undervalued or anything like that. So, you know, and I know you're saying, well, it's not doing a whole lot. Well, you know, sometimes stocks need to kind of what we call consolidate. You know, they had a big move. There's been some headwinds recently because of the strong dollar. You know, Johnson & Johnson, it's a global company, $275 billion market cap. They operate around the world. And so the strong dollar is a headwind for their earnings. And you saw that this quarter. Revenue fell 4%, earnings fell 4%. Well, a lot of that was because of the dollar, the strong dollar. So that's where you're seeing that recent weakness. But now that you're seeing the dollar come back a little bit,
or come down.
Come down a little bit. You know, I think, you know, over the long term, it's going to be washed out in the noise. And I still think it's a good time to own Johnson & Johnson. Even though it's not dramatically undervalued, it's still undervalued.
So, Frank, you really got to decide, did you buy it because you thought it was going to run up on you?
Yeah.
It won't. It won't.
Yeah, it might go up 5, 10% in the next year. But, you know, don't expect 25% or anything like that.
Yeah. Okay?
Yeah, I actually bought it not too long ago. I have no gain, no loss, really, nothing big or significant. But I just wondered if it's better to move on to another place.
Well, it should be part of your core holdings in your portfolio. Mm-hmm. It's something that you say, well, I'm going to hold on to this kind of stock for 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, very long time.
Yeah, if you're looking at it as a trade to make money quickly, that's not really the stock for you.
Yeah, it's not Johnson & Johnson. Okay? Thanks, Frank. Appreciate the call. We're coming up on the last segment of the program. Let's try to get your question in. Call us now at 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278.
If you'd like to see more about KPP Financial Select Portfolios, like our Balanced Income Portfolio, just click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com. Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. Have you tried our free risk analysis tool? It really doesn't take much time, and it's the first step in determining whether your present retirement portfolio is in line with your risk tolerance. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Free Risk Analysis Tool.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Big blunders millennials are making concerning their 401ks. This is what it is, a survey. There was a survey. And what they are doing is a vast number of them are, when they leave an old employer, they cash out the 401k, take the money.
Oh, I see it all the time.
And that's just suicide as far as retirement account is concerned. And you're paying this taxes on it and the penalty.
Yeah, because you're not 55. And just look at what Scott Cooley from Morningstar just now. Yeah. You know, the majority of employees don't get a 401k, right? So when you have one, you need to take advantage of it. That's going to be less money to take home. Well, guess what? You need to budget that in. Yeah. If you are living to where you can't save in your 401k, guess what? You're leaving above your means.
Yep.
So you got to take advantage of that. That's an opportunity, not a burden. That's an opportunity for you to put away a lot of money. Where, like we said, in an IRA, you can only put $5,500 away. That's not that much.
And, you know, I've always said, spend less than you earn. It's not that hard. Mm-hmm. And when you do leave an employer that you have a 401k in, you roll that into an IRA. And then you can add money. And let's say your new employer doesn't have a 401k. There's still no excuse. You can roll that into an IRA and at least put some money away every year. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not like you can't do it. Oh, my new employer doesn't have a 401k, so I'll just cash out my old. No, that thinking is totally wrong.
Yep.
So stop doing that. Anyways, 888-99-CHART. Let's go back to answering some questions. Our podcast listeners can call us anytime they want, and they generally do. Here's a question that came in earlier.
Hey, Steve and Justin. Love the show. This is John from Delaware. I'm just calling about Johnson Controls, ticker symbol JCI. Looking at the PE ratio, it's pretty high right now, but I was curious if I could pick some up somewhere around $45, $46 if you thought that'd be a good entry point. And curious what your thoughts are on fundamentals of the company. So I appreciate it. I'll be listening to the show. Thanks.
Johnson Controls, Inc. is not related to Johnson & Johnson, everybody. A totally separate company, okay? Johnson Controls, Inc., JCI, manufactures automotive interior systems, batteries for manufacturers of cars, and control systems for non-residential buildings. So that's what they are. They're a very solid company. Been around a long, long time. And it doesn't look too bad as far as valuations are concerned. Mm-hmm. Sales are hitting a little speed bump, but they are a big company, $33 billion. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, they've had a big drop from in 2009. They hit about $8 a share, a low. Now we're up to $50 a share. And, it's one of those things where, what do you feel about the automotive industry?
Right.
Now, if the economy weakens, automotive sales are going to fall. Automotive sales figures are at really record highs. It was like 17 million vehicles in March on an annualized basis. That's very, very high. So the bullishness is built in a lot of ways.
Yeah, this is a cyclical stock, everybody. Mm-hmm. It's attached to the economic cycle, mm-hmm. like automobiles are.
Mm-hmm. So it's above average on the risk spectrum.
Yes, it is above average on the risk spectrum. It has a good return on equity, 18%. Mm-hmm. Pays a decent dividend at 2.1%. Its financials are solid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you can't argue with that. So it's really, as Justin said, what do you feel about the auto industry? What's your opinion? What are you feeling comfortable that it's going to continue to expand?
Yeah, I think it's a good company. If you want to invest over the long term, you'll probably do pretty well. But the big issue is, like I said, is if you go into a recession, earnings are going to fall dramatically. This could fall 30, 40% very easily. And can you hold through that? If you can hold through that through the full cycle, you'll probably do pretty well. But, it all depends on your risk tolerance.
Now, GDP numbers came out earlier in the week. I talked about them when they did come out. Justin would like to talk about them a little bit more because he is a little bit more – oh, I guess we don't have time. He's a little bit more negative than I am.
I'm a little negative because I just see what's happening with inventories rising. That does not bode well for future production because now they have to eat through those inventories. Investment spending was very low. Business investment spending was -3.4%. That was not very good. Because of the oil industry, there's been a huge drop in investment there.
I have faith in the consumer.
The consumer and the housing sector is the only thing that could save the economy.
Before we close for the hour, a reminder that you can see our investment programs on InvestTalk.com. We simplify your choices. Take a look at the Balanced Income Program. That's a really good portfolio. It focuses on generating income and steady growth. Love that program. Just go to InvestTalk.com and click on the investment tabs. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley with Justin Klein. And for everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening. And we appreciate being with us. And we'll do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.